Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at home renovation and repair issues and maybe how to avoid construction nightmares with our two guests, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Ken, great to see you.
It's good to see you too, Larry.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg, and great to have you back as well, John.
Glad to be back, Larry.
Well, thanks so much for coming by. You guys busy right now, or are you?
Yes, but we're very busy. Spring calls are coming in, and we've got a lot of winter stuff that we're finishing up. I think it's going to be a good season.
As we think about, you know, spring isn't that far off. If somebody's thinking about maybe doing a project or prioritizing some things, what kinds of work might be good to consider coming out of winter? Are there specific things, or what should we be checking, I guess, is what?
Well, that's a very good question. There's a lot of good things to check. First of all, if there was any ice damming over the course of the winter, you want to look at your soffits and fascia and see if the gutters have come off the house.
That's a good place.
Walk around the outside of the house, look at everything. You could look at your roof, too. If you've got a set of binoculars, you can throw some binoculars on and take a look up there. Or I don't recommend any homeowner just going up on a roof and looking, but if you're comfortable with heights and good on a ladder, that's okay, I guess. Mm. Heat plants, how did that work for you in the winter? Air conditioning is something to maybe look at after the weather breaks when it's warm enough to test. Any foibles that you found in your house or your driveway or your garage over the course of the winter, this would be a good time to start talking to people to get estimates for the work and sort of see what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. Anytime you think about getting on the roof, I think about Max McGee, who was a packer who retired and fell off the roof and killed himself. Well, he died. He didn't do it on purpose, but
yeah.
It's a good thing to stay away from if you're not skilled or you're just not used to that sort of thing.
Well, as they say, the fall isn't the problem. It's the hitting of the ground.
Sudden stop. How about you, John?
I'll just add a little bit to what Ken has.
Sure.
Ken's focusing on the things that are wrong with the house or that could use upgrading, like energy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good idea to take a look at the things that aren't causing you trouble that might. If your house is built in the 40s or 50s or 60s, your electrical system may not be the greatest. You may have a lot of ungrounded outlets, but with a grounded system that could easily be grounded. You might not have GFCI outlets. You may not have a good smoke and CO2 alarm system. As I'm a home inspector, and there's a lot of home inspectors in the state sort of looking for work, one thing that we do for people is people call us in, and we don't do a home inspection on their house, but like Ken could call me and say, John, come and give me a deferred maintenance inspection on my house.
Mm-hmm.
And most home inspectors are going to be able to come in, take a look at your heating, plumbing, electrical, take a look at the insulation system, and maybe spend an hour and a half at your house and give you a good idea of some things that maybe they aren't problems, but maybe they could be, and you're look for some safety updates for your house as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea. The deferred maintenance a maintenance plan is a great idea, John.
That's right. People, money's tight nowadays, and we actually try to help people schedule either 5 or 10 years out.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. You can join in, by the way, if you have a question for our guests. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. And Joe in Franklin up here with a question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Larry, Ken, and John. About a year ago, my neighbor recommended a handyman to build a walk-in closet for me. Did a great job. I paid him half up front with the half to be paid upon completion. And he did about 90% of the work. The inside trim on the closet door, I have the wood, but it hasn't been put up.
Mm-hmm.
And a door between the garage and the living area was supposed to be replaced. He's disappeared. And I lost track of his name and number.
His name? You have the canceled check?
I don't. You know, banks keep the checks now. I suppose I could contact the bank.
Yeah, I think that'd be a really good way to start because you don't know what to do if you don't know who you're going to be talking to.
Yeah. So go back to that. Did you pay him the second
No.
half?
He paid upon completion. I still owe him a fair amount over $1,000 for about 2 hours' work that he has to finish.
Yeah, that's really strange. So, Ken, you go back and get the check?
Well, that's what I'd do. The first thing that I would do is find out what his name is. And then you could probably Google search him or just check to see if he's in town, if he's got a phone number. There's a fair number of really, really good handymen out there. But there are those that they're sort of living on the edge, and you know, they just may not be up to the job to finish it. So you have to be very careful when you hire somebody up front. If he did a good job for you and he's still around town, chances are he maybe hurt himself or something happened and he's embarrassed to call you. So start with that, with a straight-up mm-hmm. phone call. If you go from there, I don't know what to say, because it sounds like you've gotten more work than you've paid for. You may end up having to find somebody else just to finish it up for you.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Joe. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Hildy in Madison next. Hi, Hildy. Hold on a second here.
I got a question about gutter guards, the pros and cons of gutter guards. When we purchased ours, we were led to believe that would solve all our leaf problems, but that certainly is not true.
No.
2 years ago, we had ice damming on the north side of the house, and so our roofer removed the gutter guards from that part and installed a heat tape, and that seems to have been a pretty good answer for that part of our house. But I still have to send a young man up on my roof every fall to clean out the gutters. Where we have them, gutter guards, and where we don't, there are leaves everywhere. And I'm wondering, he's advising me I should tear them all off and just let him be my leaf answer to prayers. What do you guys think?
Well, I have mixed feelings about it. I know that Larry's got this product on his house.
It really works
that
great.
Works great. And I don't remember the name of it, but is it gutter? There's so many different products out there. And while he's thinking about the name of it, some of them are very good, some of them are mediocre, and some of them are very bad. And so, unfortunately, I've discovered that sometimes some of the ones that are good on one house are not good on another, so it might be the installation that could be an issue.
Okay.
I would look at installation. I would look at the style. I've had good luck with, I think it's the Gutter Guard product, and also a gutter, it's a gutter sponge. It's a low-tech, really heavy-duty sponge that you stick in the gutter, and it doesn't let leaves in. None of them are perfect, so...
That's for sure.
Yeah, I can't be more helpful. I'm sorry.
Yeah. There you go. I've had really good luck, and I have a one type of system on the one house, and I have a different type of system on the other house, the second system, and... Actually, both of those work great. Mm-hmm. I have no problems with them. So
it might be the installation. So her roofer, are you still on, Hildy?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, your roofer may not know how they were installed, or maybe installed them incorrectly or whatever. So that might be a good place to start, is just have them look at it again.
Okay.
Before they do, go back through your records and check to see what product they put on, and then do a search online at their website and see if you could find the installation instructions, and then review that with the contractor.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And you can join in too, by the way, if you'd like, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Kurt in Peshtigo next. Hi, Kurt.
Hello, gentlemen. Hey, I've got a kind of an unusual question about insulation. What I've got is about a 7,000 square foot masonry building that's unheated, but inside that building on one exterior wall is a 12 foot by 12 foot room that I want to heat and use it as a workshop. And that room is built out of 4-inch deep concrete block on three sides, and then obviously the fourth side is the exterior wall. What I'm trying to figure out is, I want to insulate the walls. I've already insulated the ceiling. I want to insulate the walls, but my question is, should I stud out the inside of the room and insulate inside the room and then finish that out with sheetrock, or should I insulate the outside of the block, you know, stud out the outside and put insulation in there and do it that way? Which is the most efficient way to do that?
John Freiberger, what do you think?
Well, Kurt, it doesn't sound like you're going to be producing a lot of water vapor in this room.
No.
This is going to be like a little shop or something like that?
Yeah, basically just a small workshop. You know, the main building's used as storage, but I'd like to have, you know, just a small workshop in there so in the winter I can go in there and, you know, pull stuff in and work on it.
Sure. So it doesn't appear then that we are going to have all the issues that we have in a residential setting where we need a vapor barrier.
Okay.
So this then would allow you, if you need the extra space, to go ahead and stud the outsides of the wall.
Okay.
You could also take a look at using an adhered extruded polystyrene, depending upon how much insulation you want to get, or even a urethane type that has a really high R value.
Okay.
Because you don't have the worry about the 15-minute thermal barrier that you have in the house. So
right.
I think you're open to almost everything. If you do stud or insulate the outside of the room, I would suggest you paint the inside of the room with a vapor barrier paint, which
okay.
would just be a masonry paint that is certified, because you are still going to be breathing in there, we hope, and you'll have the steaming cup of coffee. And so whatever water vapor then is in the air, we want to keep from moving into the 4-inch CMUs you have, and then perhaps freezing and spalling in there. So just go ahead and get a good coat of certified vapor barrier latex paint on the interior and go ahead and stud it on the exterior if that works best for you for space utilization.
There you
okay,
go.
So, yeah, and that. So you're talking about something like a dry lock or something like that as far as the water barrier or the water barrier paint?
Check. I know that Glidden has one. I believe Sherwin-Williams has one. So call one of the major paint suppliers, and they are actually going to be HUD or FHA certified as vapor retarding paints. And they are just, all they are is an acrylic latex paint with a little bit more acrylic in it so it fills all the pores.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Kurt. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to Gail in Oregon next. Hi, Gail. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Glad to be here. I have a question about air duct cleaning. Our house is about 50 years old. We've been in it 44, and all our neighbors are getting their air ducts cleaned. We're wondering the importance of doing that. But and one of the confusing things is they always say in the ads that they'll clean the, like, 15 ducts or something like that, and then other ducts are additional, but we were talking about, is it more important to get your intake or your, what are they called, the return cleaned? And there's also price ranges from $69 to $450, so I don't know if this is something that you guys run into and can address for us.
All right, Ken?
Sure. Yeah, Gail. There's a couple different ways people go about cleaning ducts. One of them is what's called a wet method, and they spray in something that a little bit of water, and they vacuum it out, and it's basically wash out the vents. And another way is a dry way, and that's basically just a big vacuum cleaner that goes in. And I think both ways they bore holes in the venting. Wherever it's exposed, get their equipment in and then cover them back up. Just to give you just a personal example, when we moved into our house in 1992, it was a 1920s home, never had any ducting cleaned. And we had them clean out the ducts, and we got 6 garbage bag fulls of dust and cat hair and dog hair. And so depending on who lived in the house, how well it was cleaned, and, you know, if it's ever been done before, it could be a very valuable thing to do, especially if you have any respiratory issues.
Right.
And again, if it's clean. How old is your house, by the way, Gail?
It's about 50 years old.
About 50 years.
And you've been living there 40.
If you've been there 40, so... have you had pets and that sort of
thing? Oh, yeah. We've had pets and kids and grandkids and gerbils that are probably in the ducks. And I mean, we're missing a few animals. And,
I think it's money well spent. You'll want to do is you'll want to do a little bit of research to see what the process is. That's the wide range in value or in cost represents some extra work, more than likely. So I would check to see what they're actually giving you for the money.
Okay.
All righty.
Awesome.
Good.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you so much.
Yep,
thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg's our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in today as we talk home renovation and repair with our two guests, Ken Adams and John Freiberger, I hope you will, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question, a comment, even a photo there. And we have Bubba and Rhinelander up next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate the show. I bought a home this past winter, and it was built in 2007. The basement is unfinished, and I want to be able to put a drop ceiling in there to make it accessible to get to the pipes and vents and access ducts and everything. But I hate the way that drop ceilings look. They all look so institutional, like if you're in a school or an office building. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to find a product that will function as a drop ceiling because it's easy, but not have it look so tacky like they usually do.
All right. Well, John, what do you think?
There are some really nice products out there. You can hardly even tell they're drop ceilings. If you go to some of the larger manufacturers, Armstrong would be one. Ken, other manufacturers for good quality drop ceilings.
Thanks. I can't think of it.
Tell you what,
Google drop ceilings.
But you will be amazed at
Armstrong's one,
yes. You'll be amazed at the quality that is out there. Now, you're not going to pick these up at Home Depot. Okay. You would probably are going to have to talk to your local lumber yard about a special order. If you were here in Madison, I could tell you right where to go, but Rhinelander's a long way from Madison. But you will find multiple colors. 4x4 grids are becoming more and more popular, and you can't even see the grids on some of these new ones. Be sure to check carefully on how to integrate your lighting if you're putting recessed cans and things in. So download all of the instructions before you do it or give it to your contractor. And be sure to have a licensed electrician come in to do the electrical work for you.
I already got him lined up.
Great.
But another question is, are these new types of panels, are they more cost prohibitive than the panels that are out there now?
Well, they're going to cost more. I can tell you that for free, Bubba.
Everything that's nice costs more.
Okay. Last time I checked, I had to pay more for a Mercedes than a Yugo.
I understand how that goes. Okay. Well, thanks, guys. I'll go ahead and look that up, and I appreciate your show.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's probably going to cost. It's going to cost more.
If Bubba's able to do some of the work himself, he could save himself the labor cost, and that's
considerable. Yeah, absolutely. Jim in Montello, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. My wife Connie and I are sort of do-it-yourself home remodelers who always bought fixer-uppers and fixed them up. And now we've gotten a little older. We're both retired. I don't like to go so high on ladders anymore. Uh-huh. And presently we're remodeling the basement, going to put a wood stove in with an exterior chimney. We're familiar with that technology. We now heat with wood with basically a chimney upstairs. But we also have eaves troughs to reinstall. They were taken off when the roof was put on a few years ago, and now we've decided we really do need eaves. And we're looking for a contractor who can just basically come in with his equipment and do the work from a bucket truck or something that we don't want to get up on ladders. As far as the chimney goes, we do the first part down at the bottom and kind of install what goes through the wall and out. We just need somebody to do the high work for us.
Okay, so are you looking for a recommendation, or I mean,
should I go to a roofer to look for that? Should I go to a remodeler?
Yeah, you could start with somebody that does siding, roofing, probably even installation of fireplaces. That might actually be the best place to start. These people do this kind of work on a regular basis. One of the problems you might run into is that you might find somebody that will do the work, but they may not warranty anything because your hands are involved in this. And so you may just want to consider having them do the entire chimney. You can do the furnace installation and then have them do the entire chimney. At least they're more likely to warranty that work, especially if they supply the materials.
Yeah.
I know most installers that are any good won't warranty work when the owner supplies materials if they're not 100% sure that it's a high-quality material.
Right. Yep. I'm not concerned about the warranty issues. I know what's good quality work or not. We do sure. our own work, and I wouldn't rely on their warranty anyway. I just want them to...
Sounds like you know what...
Here's the brackets. Here's where I want them put on. You got the bucket truck. Just go up there and do it. I mean, if they'd run the truck, I'd go up, but I don't have the equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good luck. I would start with fireplace companies and go from there. There are small bucket trucks you could rent as a homeowner, too. Mm-hmm. You might try if there's a local rental place, mm-hmm. either a hardware store or big box or something not too far. Check that if you want to do it yourself.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck, Jim.
Really had not thought of that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. Appreciate your call. Jim in Viroqua, on to you now. Hi.
Hi. We're in a predicament where we hired to have some work done, and I'm trying to... We bought this place, and it was built in 09, but the previous owner just built the place and never... hooked up the utilities and everything, and so we were doing that. So I went ahead and paid this guy off in full. He was almost done with the job so that I could, but for budget reasons, move on to other projects that we had to do. I can't get the guy to come back out. Mm. Every time I talk to him to finish up the job, every time I talk to him, it's they're busy doing this or that, we'll be out in a few days. I've heard this like a half dozen times in the last 4 months.
So what do you do? John?
Well, the state of Wisconsin, Jim, passed a law a couple of years ago, and I wish I could remember the exact name of it, but I think if you call Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, they can get it to you. Basically what it is you are going to be required to write this person a letter, and he has either 30 or 60 days to respond. If his response is not satisfactory, you have to write to him again. And you actually can't even sue him in Wisconsin until you go through this. What's nice about it is it's something formal. He is being put on notice because you're using a state form that you are serious about this, and if he doesn't answer you, there's going to be consequences. I'm going to write this down someplace so we know the name of the form the next time we're on the mail or on the air here, and we'll send it into Larry for the Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
But if you call Ag, Trade, Consumer Protection, I think they're going to say you want the homeowner, contractor, something or other form, and it's a nice system because, as I said, it puts them on notice that you're serious, and people always respond.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, and then one other quick question.
Okay.
When we got the estimate for the job, it included certain things, mm-hmm. Excavation mainly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now at the end when I went to pay him, after I paid off the bill, the excavation part was taken off, and he said that he's going to pass that off to the excavator to do it because we had him do a few extra things. Well, we're getting back and forth. The excavator says, no, he's billing him. So, how long do I keep playing this game? Because, I mean, eventually somebody's going to give me a bill.
Jim, this form will cover all of that. So what you need to do is basically get all of this down in writing. That way everybody has a version. They know what you want. They respond to you in writing, and you should be able to work it out.
Yeah. Sometimes just the letter results in things happening.
Mm-hmm. It does. And this is an entire process that the state worked hard to devise because, you know, Jim's complaint is there's thousands of them each year. And the state is trying to decrease the number of complaints and get people to take each other seriously and get it resolved.
If you're uncomfortable writing it, you could consider hiring an attorney to write it for you and help you step through the process. But my recollection is it's fairly straightforward.
Yeah. It's pretty straightforward. Yeah. Good luck, Jim. Thanks for calling. Jeff in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry and guests. You're talking to a very excited caller. I just purchased yesterday a Lee Porter Butler's double envelope shell design home, and I'm wondering if your guests know much about them and if they had any view with regards to pros and cons. And the main question I'm calling about is... it does have a well and conventional drain field, and I'm looking at dealing with some remediation of sulfur water.
Sulfur water, I don't think, is anything that we can help with. You're going to have to talk to one of your local well specialists, because if you've got sulfur in your water, your neighbors do too, and they're treating that. Yes, the envelope home. What year was this one built, Jeff?
It's 28 years old.
28 years old? Okay.
Yep.
Envelope homes work great. They have sort of been passed by at this point because of changes that we've been able to make in wall assembly insulation.
What is it? But, you know, people, I'm sure, what the heck's an envelope?
Well, basically, you've got a house inside a house. Mm-hmm. You have an airspace. Basically, you have two sets of walls. You have an airspace in between. Different ones are designed different ways. Some of them are designed to use the airspace as a mediating sort of part of the thermal barrier.
Yeah.
But you can design it so that the south side of it is used to pick up heat from the sun. So you can use them as a solar house. You can use it as a way of insulating. You can use it as a way of cutting out basically all drafts, because you can design the space between the two walls to be completely pressure balanced. Different architects handled them different ways, and some achieve more than others did. And what is important about envelope houses is the detailing. If the detailing is not correct, if there's excessive air, leakage, infiltration, exfiltration, then they don't work terribly well. And the problem with them is there's a lot of walls to them, so there were a lot of things to inspect and to do right.
I appreciate that, and I've been very diligent at doing my due diligence with regards to investigating all of that. The home looks to be, I will be the second owner, and the home looks to be correct in most aspects of what I can find online with regards to design, and it's in very good condition. So we're hoping his energy costs have averaged over the last 20 years or so about $80 a month. So it sounds like it should be a good home for us. So we're hoping. Mm-hmm.
That's in the Appleton area.
It is.
Jeff, I would suggest that you go ahead and have an energy audit done on the house, just because some things have changed. Like how we did attic insulation 28 years ago is vastly different from what we do. Now, $80 is not bad, but $45 would be even better. And I would suspect that you have somebody do some thermal imaging yet while it is cold, and then do a blower door test so that you can check both the house and you can check the envelope area to make sure that we don't have anything breaking down that is going to start causing additional infiltration, exfiltration. I'm thinking you're going to be paying under $500 for this.
And
you may find a little tweaks and things, some retrofitting that you can do to make this a really super efficient home.
And you could probably get some tax credits back on it, too. So.
Yep.
Sounds great, Larry.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. Good luck with the home. Give us a call after you've had that energy audit. And where do we go for the energy audit, by the way?
Focus on Energy.
Focus on Energy. That's right. Go to the Focus on Energy program. You're going to find a person or many persons in your area who are certified to do this work, and you want somebody who's certified to do it, and there's some good people out there. Larry in Plover, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have in my basement, I have a suspended ceiling, and I have a patio door. It's a walkout basement. I had some unwanted friends up above the ceiling, and when I was in there cleaning up, I pulled the insulation away from in between the floor joist over the patio door, and it was wet in there.
Hmm.
I guess I...
Not good.
One thing, I pulled the insulation out. I just wondered if there's anything I can do to insulate it again or leave it out.
First of all, you want to know what the... and moisture, where did moisture came from? How old is your house, Larry?
11 years.
Okay. Quite often, the insulation could be wet because of moisture in the house that's found its way into the wall, wetted the insulation, and sat there saturated. Occasionally, there's problems with flashing above the door that could have caused the same problem. Now, the water's coming from two different locations, so you have two different fixes. So the first thing you need to do is figure out which direction that water's coming from. You know, is it from outside leaking in, or is it from the inside, leaching into the walls? Do you have any sense of that, first of all, or did you do any?
I would say it's got to be from the inside because there's a black spot and it's just in the middle. It isn't the whole board. If it was coming in from the top, it would probably be all the way down.
Okay, so there's one cold spot that water is condensing and you're getting a little mold in there. Does that sound like?
Yeah.
Okay. What we normally do with that situation is we take the insulation out, dry it out, and then we like to use two-part foam in the ring joists around the perimeter. We also like to control the moisture in the room. So do you cook down there? What is it, just a cold space, or is it colder than upstairs?
There's heat ducts in it, but it's cool down there, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, and by the way, what kind of unwanted friends? Were they relatives or...?
No, it was mice.
Oh.
Mice, okay.
So you might have some openings where mice are getting into the house from someplace else, too. So you'll want to check that out, too.
Yep.
They love insulation because it's nice and warm and they can cozy in there. So, but the first thing I would do is take more insulation out, see if there's any more moisture in any of the other cavities. And like I say, I like to use two-part foam in the ring joists. It seals, it's self-sealing, and if you've got somebody that does a nice job, it really, really does a good job of insulating the wall cavity. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to add? We want to kill the mold, too, if there's any mold in there.
Well, the mold, once it's dry, really, you could take a little dish soap and wash it if you want, but mm-hmm. that's all you would really need to do. But I think Ken's advice on checking other areas is really important, Larry,
mm-hmm.
because if you go into other sill boxes in another part of the basement and are finding moisture, then you've got a really elevated moisture level in that basement that you're going to need to cure.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. An email from Mitch. Do Ken and John think it's advisable to hire an architect for a home renovation or addition project? What are the benefits or advantages of working with an architect on a project?
Mitch, thanks for calling that question.
That's a great question. And I think it's a wonderful idea. There's some absolutely fantastic architects out there that will really help move you through the system. I'm going to let John talk more about it because this is his forte here.
Well, Mitch asked about the benefits. Now, an architect is probably going to cost a bit more than if you just find a general contractor and he or the local lumberyard does a plan. But what you get with architectural plans is, first, you know that they're going to meet code, they're going to be correctly specified,
mm-hmm.
and that really allows you to send it out to more bidders. So you could send it out to three general contractors, and you know they're all bidding the same thing because they've got architectural drafted plans. The other thing that you find is that things evolve. If you hire Smith Construction and he has a local lumber yard, just draw up a set of plans. Well, you don't have a lot of time to think about it. An architect is going to work with you. They're going to ask you what you're planning to use the space for. They'll work on space planning, traffic planning. They'll look at ways of really integrating it with your existing house. So it's going to cost you more, but then you're going to save some of that money, I think, in the bidding process, aren't you, Ken?
Well, yes or no. I mean, bidding is not always the best route to go, because usually bidding means go for the low cost, and a lot of times you're looking for the best quality at the best value, and you might not always get it. So putting bidding aside, even if you're working with a general contractor that has some abilities to design, when you work with an architect and a builder together to help develop the project, your team could really add value and beauty that maybe none of you actually thought of individually. The contractor may find ways to do things a little bit less expensively. The architect may find ways to do things a little more aesthetically pleasing. So whether you put it out to bid or working with a contractor, I think it's a really valuable tool to have to work with an architect.
We had an email from Pat, who was in the process of preparing their home to sell. The floor drains in the basement show rust around the edges and in the hole. Should we be concerned? Is there any maintenance that we can perform there? Anything?
I don't think you should be concerned, Pat. Those are generally cast iron and cast iron rust.
Yeah.
And you've run water into them. If you wanted to clean them up, take a wire brush or some sandpaper, clean them up a little bit, spray just a little bit of WD-40 on the grill part. Don't spray it down in the drain because we don't want the hydrocarbons in the sewer. But that'll make it look a little bit nicer.
And Gary in Boscobel, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Thanks, Larry. I just have a quick question. I put a small addition on my old farmhouse, and the walls are poured walls, and the crawl space is about a 3-foot crawl space. Just left the dirt floor in there and had real serious moisture problems. The king beam and all the floor joists rotted, so I had to replace it all. And I put down heavy plastic and poured concrete floor over it, and then styrofoam sealed to the cement walls on the inside. And I have two vents, aluminum foundation vents in there, and I'm not sure should the vents be open in the winter and closed in the summer or vice versa.
I think they should be open all the time.
All the time? Okay.
So is your thermal barrier then the floor? The framed floor, not the poured concrete floor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's got 4 inches of rigid foam insulation in the floor.
Okay.
Up above the crawl space? Or
yeah.
Below? Okay.
Above
yeah.
the crawl space, yes.
Yeah.
So code actually requires that all crawl spaces be vented either to the interior or the exterior, and I think Ken is right. You don't want to vent the conditioned part of the house. And if the crawl space is not conditioned, then having it vented to the exterior is good. We've thought and thought and thought about what do you do in the summer when we have this humidity. Should we close it in the summer? Should we leave them open in the summer? And I don't think we've ever resolved it.
No, the latest thinking is as long as you have cross ventilation, a small vent on two sides, two opposing sides, the air moves its way through and wicks away any excess moisture. And I have not seen any problems that would give us...
And that's where code is, too. So
yeah,
I think that's probably the best path to follow.
There you go.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. Our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, do you have a little list of things that you need to do around your home, or what about some experiences that you've had with contractors and with construction? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And don't forget our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can post right there. And Dominic in Wauwatosa up next. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a problem with mold that's developed on the north side rafters of my walk-in attic. And I think there's two contributing factors. One, years ago, you know, we had bathroom exhaust vent, vented up, but it terminating right at a vent, at a roof vent. But then I think more importantly, I've always kept one of the windows open on the side of my attic, which is about 2 foot by 3 foot. And up until just this fall, I've always kept that window open, and I've never had any issue. When I went up there a couple of weeks ago, everything's kind of damp, and it's just developed recently. So I've disconnected the vent, and we're no longer going to use that because we're going to be remodeling our bathroom soon, and I know we need to vent it out. But number two, I've opened up that window again. So now that that's basically, I think, the cause of it, what should I do about the mold, and how should I go about doing it?
Well, the first thing, Dominic, the opening the window isn't a real good solution.
Oh, okay.
Rain is going to come in. You have an attic that sounds like it has a problem with air barrier. It may have a proper problem with vapor diffusion. It may have a problem with insulation. How old is your house, Dominic?
Built in 1928.
Okay. All three of those.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
First, well, I'd like you to learn a little something about proper attic venting.
Okay.
So I want to send you to a website that I find is very useful because they give you cross-sectional drawings, worksheets you can fill in, etc. It's called CoraVent, and I'll spell it because it's a little odd. It's C-O-R, then a dash, A, another dash, and then VENT.com.
Okay.
And they will give you a real nice explanation of how and why attics should be vented. And basically what we want is we want natural convection, air buoyancy to clear all of the heat and humidity out of your attic. So as you get heat loss up through the ceiling, warms the air in the attic, it is going to go out through high vents in the roof. And at the same time, it's going to be sucking in cool, dry air in through the soffits. I would suggest that you go ahead and go to Focus on Energy and find a good energy auditor to take a look at it. If your insulation is not R50 in the attic, you probably do not have enough insulation. If you don't have wind barriers at the edge of the attic, you may have issues. You may have a lot of leaks in your house, like where the chimney comes up through the attic. You may have as much as a 2-inch airspace all the way around that is feeding wet, moist, warm air from the basement into the attic. So you need to have a real systematic analysis of it done. And I think you're going to find that an energy audit is going to do well. Now, you're going to have a contractor there working on your bathroom. And so maybe that is the person who could do things like add soffit vents to the house.
Well, again, when we roofed, we've got just, well, maybe it's not enough, but we've got four round vents, and I've got an English cottage-style home, so the windows are tucked up under a roof line that actually protects it a little bit. So I'm able to get some circulation there, but then I recognize that because we have a walk-in door, I just have like 2 inches of styrofoam tacked to the back of that because there's no other way to insulate that door unless I replace the door with an insulated door or something like that. But yes, I have insulated the attic. It's got a hardwood floor with that rock wool underneath it, and I've put and now I can't use the rest of the attic. But I have over the years added I think like an art. I can't even remember, but I mean, I probably have about a foot of insulation on top of the floor.
Yeah.
What kind of insulation?
I don't know if I used the pink. Not the pink. It was. I did it, 15 years ago, but it was.
So probably fiberglass.
Probably fiberglass.
Well, this was the white stuff that was wrapped in a pink envelope. So.
Might have been a mineral wool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could be too.
And if those are set up there in rolls, you often get a lot of air movement between them. Which is why we always suggest a blown-in insulation.
Oh, okay.
There can be as much as a 50% difference in effective R value between a properly installed blown-in insulation and a bat type.
Yeah. Really?
So I think the energy audit is going to be a real good investment for you, Dominic, on a house of that age.
Absolutely.
Now, one other thing to check, 1928, make sure you don't have a knob and tube wiring in that house.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Because if you've insulated over knob and tube wiring, you have a major fire hazard. So you may want to even speak to a local home inspector. There are several good ones in your area. You can go to the National Association of Home Inspectors to take a look at the listings of the people that belong to the professional organizations. There's also the American Society of Home Inspectors. And maybe have a home inspector come over. It's not going to cost you a lot of money. And if the home inspector is not able to answer all the questions and they're not necessarily energy specialists, you may need to invest in two professionals. But you'll probably see a great reduction in heating bills and certainly in mold. Now, again, you originally asked, when we get back to the question you really asked, Dominic, which is what do you do about the mold? And the answer is nothing. If you have proper air circulation through that attic, that mold is in the attic and it's not in the house and it's not going to come into the house. So I would simply just leave it. If you do clean it up, the easiest thing to do would be to have someone come in and HEPA vac it. Do not try to wash it with bleach.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Roy in Shiocton, it's on to you now. Hi, Roy.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, you know, my problem is a little bit similar, quite a bit similar. I have a leaking bathroom ceiling vent, and it has just started happening since I had a new roof put on a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't leak before, but it does now, and the only difference is the roofer removed the vent specifically for that fan, and that vent went through the roof and the shingles. And he moved he took out that vent, he shingled over it, and then moved the vent tubing to the ridge, where now that is an opening with the new vent.
No, you have to get him back there to put a vent through the roof, vent stack through the roof and outside. That's really, really the wrong way to do things.
Why did he do that?
The other thing you want to do when you look up there is make sure that it's an insulated duct. You know, they've got flexible insulated ducts, and that there's a little horizontal portion of it, because what happens on all of these ducts is they're blowing moist air up, and if you go straight up with it, the moisture collects on the sidewalls of the vent and starts to run back into your...
Run back down
after you shut the vent off. So, you know, so you've got that problem too. But definitely, get it out of the building. You know, they can put a good quality roofer should put a, be able to put a quality roof vent through the roof, have it solidly attached to the vent, piping, that is. Make sure the vent piping is insulated, and make sure that there's at least a short horizontal run to capture any, just condensation that might still be in the line, and it'll evaporate out over time.
There you go, Roy. Thank you for calling. Walter in Appleton, on to you. Hi, Walt.
Hello. I have a 25-year-old, 92%, $80,000 furnace that has been repaired by a shoestring. I'm trying to find out, after reading the computer, almost 50% of them are rated as bad, or I wouldn't buy it. And I was trying to find out if you had any recommendations for a new furnace.
Okay, a new gas furnace you're thinking
of? Yeah, it's an LP gas furnace, yes.
LP gas, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's several of the major manufacturers make a good quality furnace that you could consider. Have you talked to any heating contractors yet?
Yes, I've talked to two of them thus far.
Mm-hmm. And what are they telling you?
Well, they recommended certain ones, Bryant, Demana, something mm-hmm. like that. But when I read in the computer, every one of them has some very, very bad reviews. You know, don't buy this junk, and that type of review.
you probably don't want to buy that one.
What are they trying to say there?
Well, it's in everyone. You can go to almost any unit. There's probably 30 listed, and I've looked at five or six of them, and everyone has a bad listing for the type of, you know, that type of furnace.
Well, in some cases, you might have 10 good ones and one bad one.
No, most of them are less than 50% good. 50% or less good.
Well, that's hard to respond to. There's a lot of major manufacturers out there. Lennox, Bryant, Amana's another one. I can't think of any more off the top of my head.
Train,
thank you. And that all have good reputations. It's as important who you choose to install the furnace as it is as the equipment that you choose. Well, you know what I'm trying to say. It's a little convoluted, but if you get somebody that's going to stand behind their work, and especially if you get somebody that has been around for a little while, and you know, you can work up an annual service plan for them to look at your furnace, inspect it once a year. You get somebody that's good at it, and they'll stand behind it. You'll be much happier. So I would start with a good, you know, with the reputation of the installer as well as the product.
Paired it with a shoestring was a very good installer.
Well,
but the other thing they've come up with is a PhotoMax, a whole house germicidal and odor reduction air treatment. Are these worth the cost?
Yes and no. What they have found in testing them is they do work. They're not a scam. but you do have to replace the bulbs fairly frequently. So unless you have specific problems in your house, I'm not sure why I would spend the money on it. I really like the accordion pleated filters. One goes under the name of Space Guard, April Air. And I think it's the same.
I think it's the same company.
It's the same company, really. But they really do a very good job of cleaning the air. If you have certain health problems, you know, somebody with very bad asthma or something like that, then going with the biocidal light sort of filters may make a certain amount of sense.
HEPA filters work really. HEPA filters are fairly inexpensive now, and they work very, very well.
You just have to make very sure that they will work with the furnace that you're buying, because there are some fan sizes that have difficulties moving enough air through the HEPA filters.
Yep, or get a freestanding unit in the room that you spend time with.
That's right.
Is to spend most of your time in.
Walter, just one other thing on furnaces. There's not a lot of difference between furnaces nowadays, but check your warranties. A lot of them now have 20-year warranties, so that gives you some protection.
There you go. Thanks for calling. Ken and John will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home renovation and repair issues today with Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you along today as we talk home renovation and repair. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there. Ron in Sauk City has a question or comment. Let's go there. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Just a couple of comments. First of all, John won't remember me, but I sold one of his customers a kitchen back when we were both young men.
Ah.
And he made a comment that kind of shaped my view of the world of a professional, which was I ended up having to have one of your workmen move a window. Because I hadn't done my due diligence in following the design through, and I took him out a 12-pack of beer, and you said, it's really cool that you show respect for the common working man. Now, in my mind, that was a true professional speaking. You know, you didn't rag on me, you didn't do anything, you just made a positive comment. Secondly, the word professional just came up. Licensing doesn't fall out of the sky, especially in Wisconsin. You know, I have a brother that works in construction in Texas, and it's just atrocious down there what they let him get away with. But people, when they look for a contractor, reputation, professionalism, licensing, insurance, and not, you know, I understand the economy's tough. People are looking for a deal. But you wouldn't, if you had any questions about a car, you wouldn't buy that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people just need to use the same. Yeah, I mean, your house is your castle. You're going to have, work is work. But when it's on your house, you got to live with it. So people really need to be aware. Yeah. That's all I really got to say.
That's all a great point. One thing I'd like to add is that when you give workers a six-pack, you give it to them after they're done with the work.
That's another good point. Oh, and then some nice words for you, John. That's you probably don't remember Ron from Sauk City. Well, you may remember if you saw him, but we only have his first name to go on. Ron from Sauk City, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Tom and Mequon, we are turning to you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have two quick questions. My first one is that underneath the house I live in is about a 3.5-foot crawl space, and it's a gravel underneath that, or a gravel is in the bottom of that, and the furnace is down there, and the piping from the water system, the house is down there. The way the house is built is there's a 2x2, like a window that you open up to get down in there. Then on the other side of the basement, there's a small window that you can open, and it looked like the previous owner had opened that during the summertime because he had a screen made up for the larger 2x2 window, and I'm wondering if that's a good idea to allow the air and the moisture come in during the summertime. Does that keep it clean down there? Does it make it more moldy? Or okay. So that's my first question. And my second one is that my furnace is from 1997, and I'm wondering, what is the warranty on that one, and how can I find out?
Do you have the name of the furnace?
Yeah, it's a Coleman by Evcon.
All right.
Okay, the Coleman, I think you're going to have to go on the website. That's one where I don't know. If it is a condensing furnace, that is a high-efficiency furnace, the standard on the main parts is 20 years. If it's a less efficient furnace, very frequently it's only 5 or 10. As far as the crawl space, Tom, how old's your house?
It's from about 1967.
1967, okay. Is there a vapor barrier underneath that gravel on the crawl space floor?
I don't believe so.
Okay, there really needs to be one. And you can retrofit that without much expense. You want to get like an 8-millimeter poly that is going to be caulked to the sidewalls. You can maybe brush the gravel, rake it over to one side, put the vapor barrier on one side, put the gravel all on that side, lap it by at least 2 feet and caulk the seams. I'm concerned that you may be getting both radon and moisture out of that soil.
Mm-hmm.
Are the exterior walls insulated in the crawl space?
I would have no idea. They're block.
They're concrete block, yes. Well, either if you can see the block on the inside and you can see it on the outside, then they're probably not insulated. And you probably do want to get those insulated.
Hmm. How would you do something like that?
Because it's not an occupied space, you can actually do it with sheets of foam. Check with your local building inspector, but I'm relatively sure that you do not need the 15-minute thermal barrier in a non-occupied crawl space. If you do, there are, I know Celotex and some other companies now make a foam.
Thermax.
That has a 15-minute barrier on it, and you may want to put that in. But what I would suggest you do is that you get this floor sealed so we don't have to worry about venting out radon and water barrier, and then keep it closed during the summer. What is happening, because you're running your air conditioning in the summer and the ducts leak, you are getting some air changes down there. So it really is vented into the house, even though there's not a big grill in the floor or something like that.
Yeah.
So consider that to be conditioned space. Take care of anything that could be infiltrating into it. Make sure you've got a thermal barrier so you don't have a lot of loss. As Ken said earlier, look at the sill boxes. If those are not well insulated, insulate those ideally with urethane foam, but you can do it yourself with R19 fiberglass. And perhaps even take a look at what your current energy bills are, and you may see a nice decrease.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you. Charles in Nishkoro, your turn. Hi, Charles.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife and I, about 16 months ago, went to a trade show, home show in the Wisconsin Dells, and we went up to the window at Amwood Custom Homes, and the guy said he had an Amwood shirt on, of course, and we showed him our plans. He said, I can build your home. Well, he's out of business, and the plumber that did the plumbing is out of business, but here's my dilemma. We live in Washera County, and the zoning department said that they never got the inspection report for the pipe that connects to the septic system, which is all, of course, closed over because the house is complete. As an agent for Amwood Homes, does Amwood have any responsibility for this?
You're going to have to take a look at your contract, and it sounds like you really need to consult with a real estate attorney up in that area. You've got a pretty major problem there. And how you deal with the county to resolve this is going to make a difference in how the county deals with you. The county can come in and say, dig it all up. We need to see it. If you are looking at getting this straightened out and are being diligent about it, they are going to cut you a break.
Oh, okay. But the builder went out of business, and so did the plumber that did the work.
Mm-hmm.
So
everybody is out of business. Have they gone through bankruptcy?
No, but you can't find them.
Anyone can be found, and if they have not filed bankruptcy, or if they're in bankruptcy, you can still file a claim. If they are not in bankruptcy, you can certainly take them to court. But you really do need to get an attorney involved in this. This is way too complicated for Ken and I.
Yeah, and as John said, definitely keep the decision makers at the at your municipality aware of what you're doing so that they will be more likely to be amenable to working with you.
Yep. There you go. Good luck, Charles. Sorry for your problems there.
Yeah.
Richard in Whitefish Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, Richard. Richard, are you there? We lost Richard? Must have lost Richard. We got an email from Joan who says, I need to have a walk leading from the sidewalk to porch replaced. Also need concrete porch steps replaced and concrete cement porch repaired. What type of person business would do this? It's a fairly small job, so I don't know if a concrete company would do it.
Well, it sounds like a fair amount of work, especially when you have stairs involved. Mm-hmm. What I would do is talk to a couple of concrete contractors that do sidewalks and flat work. Some flat work people don't do stairs, but many of them do. That's where I would start. If you know a good contractor, if you've worked with somebody before, consult with them. They might be able to help steer you in the right direction, or they might even manage the project for you. And that's probably about the right way to go about it.
Sort of related in a way, but Bill had a question about concrete pavers versus stamped concrete. We have about 1,000-square-foot sidewalk patio. Quoted costs for pavers and stamped concretes are basically in the same ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Both create a sticker shock. Which ages better, for example, movement and appearance? How will this affect resale? What do you got?
Well, the resale we can't tell you, but both of them certainly are very nice. There's some companies that do some beautiful stamped concrete work. The stamped concrete is often colored, and one of the questions is whether what you're going to do for coloring. If it is something that is many of the colors we've had some issues with and we've had to restain them after the years. The nice thing about the brick pavers is the colors all the way through on them. If something cracks, well, it's not really going to crack. But if an area settles, you pick them up, put in some more sand, tamp it down, and re-level it. My preference is always for brick pavers if you can afford it. Ken, mm-hmm. What about you?
No, I'm with you 100%. And the big reason that I like them up here is that you have a large flat surface that gets all kinds of weather. It gets 100-degree weather. It gets minus 30-degree weather. Yeah. It gets ice and snow. What happens with the pavers sort of move around a little bit more comfortably with the ground as it heaves and thaws and so is more forgiving. You'll be getting less cracks than you will with a complete monolithic pour. Generally speaking, with a monolithic pour, they try to put in lines that will crack. That's why you have those little grooves in sidewalks to try to manage where they crack. But all concrete cracks. What were you going to say, John?
Well, Ken, the other thing that we should just mention to Bill, it sounds like this is a big project. So if he uses a permeable paver,
that
might help a little bit with some of the control of the water. It's mm-hmm. all going to run right off the concrete. But the pavers are going to allow more moisture to seep into the soil, and you could even have a low area where you put in permeable pavers.
The last thing I want to say, and probably the most important thing, is it. No matter which one you put in, which one you choose, the most important thing is what's done under the surface. It's the prep work that makes it work. It's like painting. You know, the painting part of painting is painting your house is the cheap stuff. It's all the prep work that makes it a long, happy project.
Julie wonders, I'm having my roof replaced and know that both you guys have recommended shingle manufacturers before. Could you repeat what you recommend in terms of shingles?
Well, there's several good companies out there. If you're looking for asphalt shingles, fiberglass matted asphalt shingles, CertainTeed is one company, GAF is another. I think Ico's still around. They're a Canadian company, I'm not sure. The big thing is to go for warranty there. The major manufacturers are the way to go. Let's see, if you want steel, I can't really help you. I don't really know a lot of steel companies. If you're looking for some of the new plastic the shingles there again. I don't know a lot of the new products that are out there. There's a ton of them that have come out in the last 4 or 5 years. And unfortunately, over 4 or 5 years, it's really hard to develop a track record on a roof. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little bit old-fashioned. That's one of the places where I'm kind of conservative. I tend to go with what's proven. So good luck.
And Kevin in Madison, your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, thank you. My wife and I built a new house that we moved into in 2003, and it's a ranch house with a basement with an exposed, the basement, the lower level is exposed on the south side, so we have a patio door and some windows down there in the basement. And then the three walls in the basement that are concrete were not insulated on the outside. We chose to insulate them on the inside, so the builder put up the 2x4 studs and put fiberglass battens in between them. And so what we've got, then the other thing we did was, we planned to finish that off sometime in the future, but weren't going to do it right away. So they put up Tyvek on the outside of the wall, and they turned it around backwards so that it's just white showing to the interior of the basement, and it kind of looks semi-nice like that temporarily. So what we've got going from the interior towards the concrete wall is we've got the Tyvek backwards so that the white is just showing on the outside. We've got the Tyvek and then the studs with the fiberglass battens. And then between the studs and the fiberglass battens and the concrete is Visqueen, a vapor barrier, right up against the concrete. And in the summertime, when we have humid conditions, those walls, they sweat. Mm-hmm. So there's moisture between the fiberglass battens and the plastic. And, it does, the basement has kind of gets a musty smell. And now there's kind of a blackening that's starting to develop on the side of the battens.
Mold.
Yeah. Boy, we run into this a lot, John. I bet you.
Yes, we do.
What did we do wrong, and what do I need to do to fix that problem?
All right.
You just missed the last layer. Having the Visqueen against the concrete wall in lieu of a damp proofing or something to stop permeation through the concrete, because moisture is going to come through the concrete, was a good idea. There's nothing wrong with the studs in the insulation. The problem that you have on the interior is you also really needed to have some sort of vapor diffusion retarder over the bad insulation, because I think what is happening there is you have dampness in your basement that is moving through the insulation. The insulation is keeping that concrete nice and cold. So the concrete has become what we call a first condensing surface. So it's condensing out on the concrete. It's actually condensing out on the plastic that's over the concrete, because that's as cold as the concrete, so that what you're doing is you're condensing out moisture and you're developing mold growth down there. You need to see what your basement humidity is. The basement may simply be too moist, and you need to put a vapor retarder over the studs.
Hmm.
Ken,
yeah.
Anything to add to that?
Well, the latest codes now read you're not allowed to have a vapor barrier between fiberglass insulation and the concrete wall. So when this was done, it was code to do that. Now it's no longer code. There's a little bit of a catch-22. Mm-hmm. If you plan on living there for a long time and you want to do a nice job, I'm going to go back to the two-part polyurethane foam situation. They do allow and they do recommend that you can take your insulation out, cut the vapor barrier out, and insulate it. If you're going to have it inspected, which is appropriate, they may require that you do that. The other thing is that when your house was built in 2003, it takes sometimes 3, 4, 5 years for the concrete to actually completely cure. So in a way, it was kind of good to have that vapor barrier back on there at that time, too. So that's all I wanted to add.
All right. There you go. Thank you for calling. Bill emailed and says, I'm working in my basement of a 100-year-old house while I listen to this show. Do you know of a dust sealant that I can mix in a pump-up sprayer to seal off the remaining coal dust, etc., that doesn't vacuum off but always falls when you pound on something?
Well, I wish I knew exactly what his walls were 100 years ago. Were they may have been poured concrete, or they may have been stone, or they might even have been concrete masonry units. So if Bill wants to send me an email at FREI at chorus, spelled like a group of singers, .net, and send me a picture of it, give me a little bit more information, I can probably give him three or four different silicate-based paints that he could apply to the wall, unless it's a stone wall.
All right, there we go. Let's see. We had a comment from a follow-up comment from Jim disagreeing about leaving an unheated crawl space open in summer. I have one in northern Wisconsin with four vents. If I leave it open in the summer, it rains onto my concrete floor. Not a good situation if you don't want joists to rot. Open in winter or close in summer, according to Jim.
Each to his own. As we said, we've discussed this a lot, and our consensus was to go with code, which says to keep it open. But in that particular microclimate, Jim, you may be right.
Yeah.
Well, if you're getting water inside the building, the vents are not probably the appropriate vents, because the vents should be able to keep out all but direct splash, and that's all the only thing I could add. But good luck.
Here's an email from Leslie in New Berlin. Your guest just talked about $80 a month energy bills and cutting it to $45. I average $250 a month on energy for a 1970 all brick 1800 square foot well insulated ranch home. The only apparent weak spot are single-pane windows with year-round storms. What do you think typical energy cost should be for my home? And are the windows doing me in?
The windows are probably not doing you in unless you have extensive air infiltration. You really need to go to Focus on Energy and get an energy audit here. If your house was built to the standards of 1970, you are not living in a well-insulated house. But anything can be retrofitted.
So go to
Focus on Energy and have the house analyzed. And she asked, what could the bills be?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. How many square feet? 1,800 square feet.
Yep.
I would expect she can cut a third off of her
cut her down bill. So maybe down to about $80 off then, or thereabouts, maybe, or no, yeah, somewhere around in there.
Could be pretty significant, Larry. The other thing that she needs to look is at her mechanical equipment. How good is the furnace that she has?
Yeah, that's the other thing. If that's 25 years old, there's a problem there too. Guys, here we are out of time. My goodness, if the time flew by. Thank you so much. You'll be back in a couple months to do this all over again, I expect.
It'll be springtime.
It'll be spring. Indeed. Yeah, we got a whole new set of problems to talk about. Oh, man. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. By the way, we've got a link to his page. And John, you're going to link up a couple things for us, too, that law that we were talking about earlier.
Yes, Larry, I'm going to get the how do you deal with a recalcitrant contractor to you. And the other thing I'm going to send you can put on your Facebook page, is what is a legal construction contract in the state of Wisconsin if they ask for money in advance? Because we find many people don't know this.
So that'll be up on our Facebook page. In the meantime, thanks to Ken Adams and John Freiberger, and thanks to you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.